8:15 now on this Tuesday morning. The storm is headed in, that storm that is in the Caribbean is expected to be a Category 2 or 3 when it heads into Florida. Sorry for them. Thankfully for us, we've had our turn with Francine. It's not coming here. Michelle Payne joins us now, Chief Strategy Officer for the United Way of Southeast Louisiana, to talk about how you can help with relief efforts after Francine. Good morning, Michelle. How are you?
Good morning. Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Tell me about the damage that Francine caused, and as a result, what kind of challenges that presents for the United Way of Southeast Louisiana.
Sure. Well, as we all know, it hit about a 2, and it did hit many of our families and parishes that we serve throughout our 7 parish region. We did find, thankfully, that it wasn't, mass disaster like it was for Hurricane Ida, but yet still a lot of families lost power or did get water in their homes, which, as we know, causes challenges for them. Just one family that maybe live in paycheck to paycheck, but yet lost an entire refrigerator full of food, that does cause a huge burden on them. So what we've been trying to do is provide people with supplies and gift cards and various ways just to kind of help support them in terms of getting back on their feet and helping their families recover from the hurricane.
I don't think people realize sometimes how, and look, everybody works hard. I'm not saying anybody gives anybody anything, but how sometimes some people are in a much better position than are others to deal with something like this when it happens, because for some it's an inconvenience, for others it becomes quite an obstacle.
Absolutely, and you took the words right out of my mouth, inconvenience. I think for many of us, thankfully, we can say it's an inconvenience when we lose these things, but for some, actually we just did a pop-up out in Kenner at the Sam's Club, and I was speaking to one individual. And one of the things we were able to do was help them with their energy assistance, and it was to help turn their lights back on. And she said, when will this come through? And we explained kind of the time frame, how it will come through on their end. And she said, thank you so much. She goes, it's going to go off, and I'm just going to wait until it comes back on. So, that $200 that we were able to put back into their account made a huge difference of turning their lights back on. And then, there were other families that they needed the supplies so much that any food or any, cleaning supplies that we were able to supply to them really made a difference. And they were willing to come out and, come out and wait potentially in lines, that were hundreds deep to just get some supplies to help them recover.
I get the text from the hard cases or that think they're hard cases, but I wonder sometimes if they'd be so hard of a case if they were actually hit in the face with adversity. But when it comes to the people that you help, these are not people that refuse to work or don't want to work. These are hardworking people that just are struggling. Accurate?
Absolutely. What we call, we identify these individuals as ALICE. So it's an acronym that stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained but Employed. So it's often people working sometimes even more than one job to that point. And when we do these pop-up events, we actually try to time them to where it's either before work or after work, because a lot of them are, to your point, exactly going to work, working hard, and living paycheck to paycheck.
Tell me about the Francine Relief Fund, if you would, please, Michelle.
Sure. Yeah. So we have a fund open on our website. If you go to UnitedWaySELA.org, you can find it there on the homepage. But any relief efforts that we have going on, we use those funds. So whether it's individual gifts or it's corporate gifts, all of that money, 100% of what we bring in goes back out into the community. And we are so thankful to those that have stepped up. We know it's not a matter of when, that if it's going to happen, but a matter of when the next storm is. So really these efforts go back into the pockets of the individuals that really need the help, whether that's, able to get them supplies or gift cards or energy assistance. In this case, we were able to do so. Thankfully, we are very appreciative. Everyone, the collective impact made thus far has been over $103,000 raised, and we were able to help over 750 families. But we know being out there and doing these pop-up events that the need is even greater, and every dollar really makes a difference. So if anyone is listening and wants and feels compelled to give, we can ensure that it goes back to people who really need it most.
You can go to UnitedWaySELA.org, or if you're old school, you can mail a check to United Way of Southeast Louisiana, care of Francine Relief Fund, 2401 Canal Street, New Orleans, 70119. Tell people, if you will, what the donation is going to support.
Sure. So the donations go back right out into the community. So we host pop-up events We've thus far been able to do 5 different pop-up relief events, thanks to partners like Energy and others, and as well as just individual donations that come in. So collectively, we're able to go out into the communities that are hardest hit and provide them with essential supplies. So whether that's cleaning supplies, whether that's, we've done a lot of non-perishable foods, because this time a lot of people did lose everything that was in their refrigerators. In some cases, we're able to do gift cards. I mean, it really just kind of depends on those donations that are in and how we can be of most impact to those families out there.
If people are on the other side of it and they need help, how do they go about that?
Sure. We have wonderful resources available. We have 4 different prosperity centers throughout our 7 parish region. If you go to our website, you can find one of those prosperity centers. We encourage people to come in and work with our wonderful team and figure out if there are some resources available that we may be able to support them with. But we also have a wonderful website, that UnitedWaySELA.org/resources has a slew of resources, whether that's things available through state, federal, local. It's really a compilation of any sort of resources that we know of, that partners are offering, that we're offering, that are there. We also encourage people to follow us on social. That is actually how we put out our most information in terms of where we would be next. If we're going to have a pop-up, that's how we push it out. And we also utilize our wonderful partners as well to help communicate that out to their clients.
Thank you, Michelle. I appreciate your time and your efforts. You can go to United Way, SELA.org/Francine Relief. Or if you want to go old school and mail a check, send it to United Way of Southeast Louisiana, care of Francine Relief Fund, 2401 Canal Street, New Orleans, 70119. Next half hour, we're going to talk about Canal Street. Before that, we'll talk with the National Weather Service about the area, the potential tropical cyclone, I think they're referring to it, in the Caribbean now. 822 traffic, WWL. 827, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Tyler Stanfield, meteorologist at the National Weather Service. Talk about potential tropical cyclone 9, which is still in the Caribbean. But, Tyler, if you look at the models and what the hurricane hunters are saying, is there any real doubt about what's going to happen here?
From the most part, right now, we actually have a pretty good consensus on the forecast. The models have really kind of locked in on the track, and so our confidence has increased about the threat decreasing over our area. We don't expect direct impacts from this hurricane that's developing the eastern Gulf. So that is good news, but if you have any folks that are over in the Florida Panhandle, west coast of Florida, and they're not aware of this, definitely make sure that they're aware of it. We have hurricane watches that are now posted across much of the Big Bend of Florida and up over to Pensacola Beach and Tampa. So definitely make sure that you, if you have any folks over there, make sure that they're aware of the developing situation.
I know some people that live here on property over there. Is there a consensus on, and I know it's hard to predict an exact landfall, but if you had to pick an area in the Big Bend area, what would you say?
Right now, I mean, we're definitely going to see some more wobbles. I think the system's not fully developed yet. It's likely to become a tropical storm today and then quickly strengthen into a major hurricane as it gets to the eastern Gulf. But as that storm kind of gets itself together, there's definitely still more wobbles in place that could occur and cause that track to kind of waver back and forth. So it's pretty hard to nail down the exact location, kind of like you said, but really, like right now, our main focus in the track cone right now is the center of the storm could be anywhere between Apalachicola over to Tampa.
So Destin, for the most part, out of harm's way?
They'll be on the western side right now. Is I think the main consensus, and the tropical storm watches extends just to the east of Destin over there. So not quite in the iron sights of the storm, but definitely be prepared in case we see any kind of sudden shifts in the track. It's definitely be able to monitor the forecast.
And so, as this thing makes its way inland, what about Sunday's game with the Saints in Atlanta? Any effects on the Atlanta area from this?
Sunday, yeah. We'll be seeing that storm push through over Friday and Saturday. It looks like it should be clearing out of that area by Sunday, though. We may have some lingering showers in the area, but relatively, fortunately, they have a dome, too. So just for the folks that are heading that way, yeah, maybe a little bit rainy, but the system itself should be weakening by that point out of the area.
Thank you, Tyler. Anything else beyond that in the Atlantic we need to worry about?
Not at this moment. We're not tracking anything else that's going to be a threat to our area.
So you can give me the all clear for 7 to 10 days?
At least for the next 7 days, for sure.
That'll take us October. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Tyler Stanfield, the National Weather Service. Day at a time, that's all we can do. We come back, we're going to talk about the redevelopment of Canal Street. And if y'all are old-timers, I'd like to hear from you about what Canal Street used to be like and how you would like to see it transformed today. Right now, it's time for WWL First News. 8:45, quarter till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. I've been looking forward to this. Dave and I got that right? Davon Barber joins us now. Sorry, sir. President and CEO of the Downtown Development District. Good morning. How you doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you, Tommy?
I'm okay, sir. Canal Street, I know from seeing some of the old movies, that, you know, they had a big Canadian Club sign there, I think, if I remember correctly, the advertising of bourbon or whatever it was. And it seemed like it was the Times Square of New Orleans. And would that be accurate or not?
You know, we're very unique, and I would say perhaps yes, in the historical context of New Orleans.
Tell me what the Downtown Development District ideally would like to see there, and what has it become, and where was it once? I guess maybe we can give a little historical context on it. Give us some.
Absolutely. Sure. So I think for many of your viewers who are not familiar with the Downtown Development District, we're actually the nation's first property-based assessment district in the country. And so what that means is the property owners located within our boundaries pay an extra ad valorem tax that funds our operations. And simply put, our mission is to ensure that downtown New Orleans is healthy and thriving and a great place for all. One of our key principles is to promote development. And so earlier this year, during our State of Downtown, we released our comprehensive economic development strategy. One of the core tenets of that economic development strategy is a renewed focus on Canal Street. You know, as you've kicked off this conversation, Canal Street is certainly important to this community given its history. We know the great stores that were located there, and it's important to maintain that focus. A lot of times when I'm out in the community, I remind everyone that just like that fine china or jewelry that we have in our closets, we've got to polish it from time to time. And this is a really exciting opportunity for us to continue that focus. We have been working alongside, you know, our colleagues in city government and the private sector to really bolster economic development along Canal Street. In fact, you know, a lot of people may not be aware of just the excitement that's taking place. Earlier this year, we launched the Canal Street Quarterly, which is a newsletter that focuses on all the improvements taking place in downtown New Orleans. And so we're excited about the future of Canal Street. We see this as a destination that offers a vibrant retail mix of both national as well as local tenants. It's a place where artists can showcase goods, and it's a place where people, again, you know, we want to create those Instagrammable moments where we're celebrating artwork, where there's vibrancy, there are people shopping, there are people living, there are people opening businesses along Canal Street.
People are texting in about the halcyon days of Maison Blanche and D.H. Holmes and Gotchaws and other places like that that were once on Canal Street. Has the business environment changed in terms of online shopping and so forth? I know malls are struggling, but is that something that could be possible for Canal Street, luring big merchants like that, or are those days gone, Davon?
Sure. I think it's a great question. I would say that the retail sector has absolutely evolved. You know, many of the mainstay brands that we've come and known, they've gone. You know, stores like Macy's, they announced that they were closing upwards of 150 stores nationwide. So I don't necessarily believe that we'll bring back, you know, the big box. Again, the retail industry is evolving. However, there is an opportunity, I believe, to bring in and cultivate many of our local brands. I really envision a place where, you know, local entrepreneurs are filling a void in the merchandise mix along Canal Street. I also see an opportunity for other national brands to come along Canal Street as well. We've got some great activity generators. You know, when we analyze foot traffic along Canal Street, we continue to see year-over-year growth in visitation. That's really strong. In fact, you know, we have a number of visitors that travel more than 250 miles on a regular basis, more than 30%. We regularly see that. So I do think, you know, the days of sort of big box retail are gone. Online shopping has definitely impacted the retail sector. However, at the end of the day, when you look at countless studies, it shows that consumers really love brick and mortar. And as New Orleans, we love our local businesses.
That, and you know, it seems like tourists, if you look at the hotels in the area, sometimes tourists like to get out and shop. Look at what happens in New York. Look at what happens in Chicago and San Francisco and other areas. Let me take a break. When you come back, if you can, Devon, maybe you can give me some examples of other cities that have a street like this, a main drag, if you want to call it that, that you would like to see Canal Street maybe develop into. And if y'all have any ideas, 504-260-1870, I'd love to hear from you. I would love to see Canal Street come back to just have some shops and some restaurants, and it would be a great area for tourists to walk as at night, well-lit, safe, secure from the hotels. Text me, 504-260-1870. We're talking to Devon Barber, President and CEO of the Downtown Development District. City Council is looking for ways to redevelop the Canal Street and make it back to what it once was, 851 or maybe even better, 9 till 9, traffic now, WWO. 8:56 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Devon Barber, President and CEO of the Downtown Development District, about Canal Street. Somebody texted in and said, Tommy, the stores were absolutely stunning back then. I remember shopping with my mom at Gus Meyer, Gold Rings, and Labiche's. The store clerks wore white gloves, and you were expected to be dressed when you shopped there. It was also a very clean and beautiful street. Well, I don't think white gloves are coming back, nor maybe people dressing up when they go shopping, but Devon, there, I would think there are streets in other cities. I mentioned maybe New York or Chicago or San Francisco or even Market Street. Somebody texted in Denver. That would be maybe some examples of what you would like to see.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I thought about this quite a bit, and in terms of our general downtown planning, I'd have to say, you know, when I look to downtown Chicago, Michigan Avenue, by far, is for me, is the gold standard. I think there are a lot of similar characteristics. For those who travel, you know, downtown Chicago, Magnificent Mile has phenomenal retail, great landscaping, great streetscape. You get a sense of just strong responsibility, both in the public sector and private sector, in curating this great retail experience. And so when I think about the future of Canal Street, I look a lot to Michigan Avenue and downtown Chicago.
I would think that one would rapidly build on the other, would build on the other, would build on the other, but how do you get somebody to go first?
You know, it's interesting. I fundamentally believe that it's the role of the public sector to prime the pump. You know, capital doesn't just drop from the sky. We've got to give investors a reason and a sense of hope. And so, you know, that's why we're doubling down on our cleaning efforts. We're partnering with others to enhance public safety in our district. We're focused on key partnerships that really create what I like to describe as these Instagrammable moments. Well, let me give you an example. You know, when you're visiting Canal Street, it's not just simply about being on Canal Street, but it's also about the approach to Canal Street. And so we are delighted to partner with the state of Louisiana and also GNO Inc. To deploy what we're calling our French Door strategy. This is a beautification effort along five key blocks that connect to Canal Street: the 100 block of Dauphine, the 100 block of Bourbon, the 100 block of Charter, Decatur, and Royal. And so over the coming weeks, you will start to see key investments in terms of new public art, decorative lighting, sidewalk repairs, again, enhancing the shopping experience. And so we're very, very excited about that.
Is there a way for people to send in ideas or offer suggestions?
Absolutely. I would say, certainly, I encourage all of your listeners to join our website. So if you sign up for our newsletter and visit downtownnola.com, you can sign up there to receive our weekly updates, as well as to subscribe to the quarterly Canal Street Quarterly. We welcome that feedback all the time. Our social media, we like to broadcast everything that we're working on. So, yes, we absolutely welcome that feedback. We want to hear what we want our citizens to be engaged in this process.
And we'd love to see it. I think it's a great asset that is being undervalued. Thank you, sir. Devon Barber, President and CEO of the Downtown Development District. We take a break. Come back, talk to Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter.